From Madam Vice President to potentially Madam President, Kamala Harris is stepping into the spotlight faster than you can say Willie Brown. But as she transitions from her role as VP to presidential candidate, she's facing more scrutiny than a teenager's Instagram account. Meanwhile, back in her home state, my home state, Governor Gavin Newsom just signed AB 1955 into law, proving that in California, what happens in the classroom stays in the classroom, or so they hope. Today, we'll dive into Harris's presidential prospects and the ripples caused by AB 1955. Because in politics, as in life, it's all fun and games until someone passes a controversial bill. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar. Is the first live stream of Fired Up after 30 episodes. I have a great show for you tonight. I've got three great guests. I've got a Hollywood star who's too good looking that we all hate him in Craig DeLuz. We've got G Mangani, who is a school board member. And we got Zach Giannino, who is a vice president of the Young Republicans of San Diego. He, my friends, is our future. Gentlemen, welcome aboard. And I want each of you to tell us a little bit about yourself. And we'll go with Craig.
Oh, okay. Well, to be clear, I got about 30 years experience in public advocacy and media relations. I am currently the Director of Communications and spokesman for the California Republican Assembly. I host a program called The Rundown, which talks about 2A news and conservative views. I think that pretty much says about all. I'm located in Sacramento, California. I've been in a few movies. When I say movies, I'm more talking like, you know, the B flicks that you see that you used to rent for like 50 cents at Blockbuster. More like those. But I have a good time.
Hey, you know what? We look at it at various levels. I look at it as you're living the American dream. And Craig was also a congressional candidate as well, and he's very sharp, knowledgeable, and that's why I wanted him on this show. He's probably the most seasoned out of all of us. But then we also have G. G is more my age, but he's an up-and-comer too. We got started about the same time, about 2015. And G is still holding his elected office. G, if you could tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't qualify for any B flicks or even a Z flick. I mean, so you're well ahead of all the rest of us. But yeah, I grew up here in San Diego, actually Poway, so that's East County of San Diego for those who are not natives, and moved to Rancho Santa Fe here in 2010, which is more on the west side of San Diego. Went to UCSD, and I'm running a software consulting company and run an investment partnership. I'm the president of that. But in 2018, I decided, hey, let's serve the public, and ran for the school board here in Rancho Santa Fe, won a seat on the governing board, and then in 2022, I ran again for re-election and won again. And I just love serving the kids. And, you know, I always say, it's great getting that seven-figure salary. Too bad they're all zero. So,
yeah. Gene and I did start together. I remember when you started in politics, people, it's funny because your conversations go, should I stand in front of the post office or the supermarket to tell people who I am, the glamorous job. And now we have Zach. Zach, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Yes. Well, thank you, William. I appreciate being invited to be a guest. So I was born in Boston, Massachusetts in the year 1993. So I'm going to be 31 tomorrow, actually. Moved to San Diego from Boston in 2000. I went to UCSD, graduated in 2017. Immediately after that, I went right into the trenches. I ran for city council in City of Santee. Got about 30% of the vote. My first time running for anything, did it really by myself entirely. Was an incredible experience, taught me so much about the inner workings of local government and the parallels to the state and the federal. So it was it felt like a win. But then I took, you know, that experience and started to get more involved in paying attention to my local electeds. In 2021, I started Fed Up with Fletcher, which was a political campaign awareness movement to hold Nathan Fletcher, former Supervisor Nathan Fletcher, accountable. And then in this year, I was a Central Committee candidate. I did not make the top, but, you know, I think that's just a part of the part of the game. And, you know, I'm fired up, as your podcast suggests, to continue fighting. And right now I serve as the vice president of the San Diego Young Republicans. And that has been one of, if not the most fulfilling part of my political career and journey, being able to see people in San Diego give conservative Republican ideals an opportunity. And our club in the last year and a half has grown 657% in membership. Wow. Our finances also 600% growth in finances. So we have a lot of exciting stuff going on, and I'm ready to ride the wave and keep the wave going.
You know, Zach, I'll tell you something funny. I remember Nathan Fletcher when he was a young Republican.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And for people out there, Nathan Fletcher was pretty much, at least to me, it seemed like he was designated as a future governor of California. But the downside of being Nathan Fletcher is tall, and at a time he was pretty good looking, and the women loved him. And he just loved too many women back at the wrong time. And that proved to be his eventual downfall. Zach, before we get into it, where does that stand? Because for the audience out there, Nathan pretty much got caught in an affair, and it became kind of ugly because him and his wife, Loretta Sanchez, who is arguably the most powerful Democrat in California, were trying to bully the girl. That's just a quick little inside baseball. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that has been that's a saga in of itself. As you can imagine, Fletcher is going to and did hire firms that are known for defending public officials in sexual harassment cases. So when you look at that firm's list, it's kind of it's not funny, but I mean, there's some interesting comparisons. But right now, after both parties, both Grecia Figueroa, who is the defender, or is the woman involved here, and Nathan Fletcher, both teams have had like three or two different firms representing them because of the antics and the playing out of things, the appeals, and all the legal shifting that happens in this kinds of thing. So it's an ongoing, it's still going right now. They'll occasionally meet at the courthouse for quick briefs, but it's seeming like, and I don't know, but it's seeming like it's going to continue on and go to trial. So it's a lot still to unpack.
And Loretta has left them, people. Craig, before we get into this too, I was curious about your input. Craig is one of our state's best 2A activists. And I have been seeing a lot of Newsom peddling about, you know, trying to get support to create a new amendment to pretty much take our guns. Is that just him posturing, or is he really going to try to do something like that?
That's him running for president in 2028. Now once he realized that he didn't have a shot in 2024, he's posturing for 2028. Gavin Newsom is famous for promoting anything that will get his name out there in the media. He doesn't care if it's a good idea. He doesn't care if it helps the people. He doesn't care if it's the truth or reality. He's just trying to you know, pimp his political career is what he's trying to do.
Gotcha. You know, and you know, Gavin Newsom is paper mache. He's actually very weak, in my opinion. And that's because he's never really been challenged. And I think when he got challenged by DeSantis, he got crushed in that debate in many ways. So I think he's actually in for a rude awakening. I view him a little bit like Rudy Giuliani, just a better looking version. Remember when he put everything on Florida? He was America's mm-hmm. mayor. Everybody thought, hey, there's our guy. And he just collapsed. And that's kind of how I see him.
I'll tell you, the thing about him is that he's quite politically savvy. Yes. The problem is that, number one, the facts aren't on his side. So the policies that his party wants to support are all wrong. And as he's implemented them, they're failing as he implements them. And yet, which is the reason why he has to lie about them. Right. And the other issue is that he's running in a party where DEI is king, and he's a rich white male. And that's not going to bode very well for him going forward, especially coming out of the state of California.
Exactly. It's just, but you're right. He's very savvy, and he will attack you with every lie. Again, the problem is nobody attacks him back. When John Cox debated him, John Cox called him a murderer because he supported 2A rights, and I got livid at John Cox because John Cox said, "I'm not here to talk about that." I'm like, "The man just personally attacked you, and you're not here to talk about it." So, and that's the kind of opposition he's faced. But let's get on to the woman he appointed to be senator. If I remember correct, United States Senator, and that is Kamala Harris. You know, hey guys, forgive me here. I think I may have hit the wrong button, so I have to test something here real quick with the audience. Share screen, entire screen. There we go. And that is, yeah, we're going to have to deal with seeing it on the side there, because if I do it properly, it's my whole screen. I hit a button as I was prepping for this and not being attacked. But those are her accomplishments, in essence. 15 million as vice president with Biden, 15 million unvetted illegals, inflation as high as 9%, gas prices. Some of these I wasn't aware of. Consumer debt, released terrorists into the country, the Ukraine-Russia war, the Israel-Hamas, the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, and we're going to talk about that. Obviously, violent crime has been skyrocketing. There's four or five there. There's so much to talk about with her. It's just a pretty ugly situation in my opinion. So let's start out with the DEI hire. I just came across this by accident. And this was Joe Biden actually said this, you know. And it's funny. Let me pull it up for the audience there, and then I'll read it out as well. Okay. Together. Oh, is that it? Yes. To me, the values of diversity, equality, inclusion are literally, and this is not kidding, the core strengths of America. That's why I'm proud to have the most diverse administration in history that taps into the full talents of our country. And it starts at the top with the vice president. And the reason I bring that up is she's being attacked as a DEI VP, and I have said that. But let's start with G. Do you think that's fair to sit there and say that? Or do you think that's going too far on our part as we politic towards November?
Well, I mean, Biden, when he came into office, the first thing he said, or I believe not when he came into office, but when he first ran, he said, "I'm going to get a female black vice president, and I'm going to get a female black Supreme Court justice." So he himself said that he was prizing their skin color or their ethnicity for these positions, which, okay, well, let's make sure that they're qualified first, and then you can choose from whoever's there. But I don't think that's unfair to say that she was chosen because of that. And, in fact, I hear that there were some reports that he felt boxed in by those promises when he was running in the primary. So he had to figure out who would be the right black woman to pick for vice president. So the media is going back and saying, well, he never really said that. But all you have to do is dig up the video footage and it's all right there. So, yeah.
And Zach, I mean, obviously G doesn't think it's unfair. I actually think it's slightly, it's not unfair, but I think we have to be careful with that type of attack. What are your thoughts, Zach?
I actually do agree with that, and I think I would lean a little more that side of things. I find that a lot of times, especially at the national level, there's a lot of political bait, and it's used as a way of calling something out, but in a manner that's going to be used against the people calling her out for it. And I think this is one of those things that, you know, attacking her that she's a woman or attacking her about her sexual past. I think those are things that really sidetrack some of the things on that list you just showed us, where we should be honing in on the state of our country. I mean, in the state of our state. I mean, her record does not stand well when you look at those things. When you go after her being a woman, well, she was a senator. She was an attorney general. She's the vice president. Those are accomplishments. That's good for women. I mean, there's ways you can look at those things as benefits. And I think when Republicans make those arguments, you already see it online. People are like, oh, the more Republicans talk about her dancing, the more I want to vote for her. I mean, so you're right. We have to be careful and make sure people see the side of her that has led to all of these failures across the board.
And let me jump in, because I think it was more of a double negative question, but I think we should not be attacking her based on her skin color or her gender, but I think it should be based on the accomplishments and or lack thereof, right? So it's all about qualifications for me.
Absolutely.
Well, right. I think it goes even further than that. You know, once again, I think that, yeah, you're correct in that we should not be attacking her on that, but when someone raises the question, we ought not shy away from it, because I think you just saw with the White House logo, President Biden himself. Those are his words, not Republicans' words. Those are the president's words in and of themselves. And he said when he was running that he was only going to choose from among black women. Now, what that tells us is, in his eyes, she's the most qualified black woman. I don't know that she's the most qualified woman. I don't even know that she's the most qualified candidate. All I know is what he said. Now, when I look at her qualifications, the one thing she's managed to do, and she's been very successful at doing, is failing up. Because when it comes to the job she's actually elected to do, whether it was district attorney in San Francisco, where she had the lowest conviction rate of any big city district attorney, or where she was caught covering up a cocaine issue at the crime lab, or whether it was as attorney general, where she oversaw a 10% increase in violent crime. The first time in 22 years, she ended a 22-year streak of violent crime going down in the state of California. She oversaw it going the exact opposite way with her smart on crime policies, which basically meant we're going to decriminalize crime and we're going to let criminals out on the street. We're going to tell victims, tough luck.
Right. You know, I grew up in a household where my relatives were black, brown skinned. Then we came in, my sister and I. We were dragged, our heads were put down. Why they got blue eyes? Why they so white, you know? So, and my point being is we ran the gamut. And the one thing I grew up, and mostly because of sports, equality, meritocracy. And so when I saw as G said, I was offended, because I do view myself as an American patriot, because I think it's the greatest country. And to me, those two picks were sending a message to America that it's not about being qualified. And I think that's a terrible message, because it doesn't matter what I think politically. It matters how people see it, you know, and how, I mean, back in the day, it was advantage white guy. You know, there's a great golf movie I just started watching that talks about their Mexicans are forming the golf team. And I enjoy seeing that. But I don't need to see that every week, because that's not what America is about. But we need to know our history. So that truly bothered me. But Zach, to your point, she is an accomplished individual on paper. She really has. She was appointed these positions. Craig, you want to jump in there?
No, I was going to say she's good at moving up. I mean, she knows how to work the internal political game. Think about this. She worked to help hide Biden's infirmities long enough to where she didn't have to go through any primaries. She's now being anointed the candidate without one person voting for her. This is the person who couldn't even poll at 2% in the primaries 4 years ago. Democrats didn't like her. Black voters didn't like her. California voters didn't like her. And now she's going to be the nominee for the Democratic Party. She knows how to work that inside game.
From the party that says Republicans are a threat to democracy, right? They just
right.
Democratic process.
Yeah, you know, you're right.
How many shenanigans it's amazing how many shenanigans she must have pulled in those 48 hours to sew up the nomination. And you know it started on Saturday because by Monday she had everyone lockstep in.
Oh no! No!
It did not start Saturday.
Yeah. It was.
She had Nancy Pelosi and
the rest. I'm sorry, Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats. They went and they met with Biden and they said, "Look, we're going to do this the easy way or the hard way." And you notice it was a constant rollout of people telling him he should step down. He should get out of the race. Leaks out of the White House. Leaks out of Congress about how bad he was. And it was only going to get worse. And what he realized by the very end was that, hey, either I need to drop out or my entire legacy is going to be tarnished as a senile old man.
Exactly. But what I was saying, too, is this: she had dress rehearsals. So she went into action once that power play was made and she secured everything. And I think there's a little bit of undertone here. I think they also think, well, if she loses, she's done. You know, because my understanding or the take I get is she's not even popular within her own party. And one more note before we move on to Afghanistan is I found it ironic when she dropped out at approximately, I want to say, 1 or 2 weeks before the California primary. Because my take back then was, well, she should win California, but that showed me that, damn, she doesn't even have that much support. You know, Willie Brown couldn't really move the needle for her enough. All right, guys. What's that?
She was on the ballot, and I think she pulled at like 1% when all is said and done.
She's
Viagra in all of California for Willie Brown to pull that one off.
So let's go to the Afghanistan withdrawal. And the reason I want to bring that up is I put the blame on Biden, but she always wants to take some credit. So I don't know how much play she had in the Afghanistan withdrawal, but I do know the news was going around that she was the last one in the room. She helped make that decision, and that decision got 13 individuals killed, murdered in my eyes, because the reports we were hearing afterwards was that was an ill-advised withdrawal in how they did it, the Democrats, because they wanted the optics. And you kind of saw this coming. But my question to you, we'll start with Craig, is can this be used against her strategically by the Democrats? Like, so my take is it should be towards the military vote. What are your thoughts on that, Craig?
Well, I think anything that Biden takes credit for, that she tried to take credit for, you can now utilize against her. I mean, she talked about how closely they worked together and they were a team.
Exactly.
Any of the failures of Team Biden are fails of Team Biden and Harris, or Harris and Biden. So I think you lay it all on her. I think you put it all on her. And there's enough. I think if you focus on the policy, the reality is what policies would be different. What policies are different that Kamala Harris will be promoting that Joe Biden wouldn't have? Let's keep in mind, before the world finally admitted that Biden was cognitively unwell and not able to serve and not able to run again as president, he was already behind Donald Trump because of the failed policies. Yes. Let's focus on the policies, because those are all the same things that she is going to be promoting.
Zach, your thoughts with the younger voters? Do they even care? And I don't mean this with disrespect, because I just don't know. Do they even care about Afghanistan or even understand it?
Well, it's a good question. And I think a lot of my generation grew up watching all of this unfold and watched our country engaged in a very confusing, not purpose-driven squabbling in the Middle East. And then on the tail end of that, the exit was a disaster. So we're left thinking, you know, what was the point? What did we gain? What was the goal for the United States to be there for 20 years? And, you know, when people die on the tail end, when Marines die, I think it needs to be talked about a lot more, because you're right. It's not surfacing in the manner it should, because probably one of America's largest, one of our biggest failures when it comes to foreign diplomacy.
You know, Vietnam has a history through Hollywood and through the history books, but I agree. I think Afghanistan made me realize, and I've had some friends back home saying, that's kind of unpatriotic. I come from a military town. I flew to Panama. My whole street, they were all special forces. And I am, and my partner, Big John, kind of opened my eyes a bit to this, you know, kind of slapped me in the head, kind of like that Batman Robin meme. Bam, you know? And I'm very anti-war now because I'm like, we're sending these boys to die for the military-industrial complex. And I say that because of the fact we don't declare official wars. So, and when you sit there and give them the rules of engagement where by the time they get permission to fire back, some of them could be dead, I'm like, why? What are we doing there? And to me, this exit was a cherry on top in the incompetence of the government, but the incompetence because they don't care. Nobody's really talking about it. Gee, your thoughts.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
No, go ahead, Craig.
Go ahead, Gee.
I've got my thoughts, but it's related. But
What I would say is the problem is not the government. The problem is the politicians. Whenever you have politicians that are driving and making military decisions, that's when you have a problem. Once you decide that there is need for military engagement, you need to let the people who are in the military. You need to let them handle it. You need to have a very clear definition of what is the end goal, what is success, and then once you've achieved it, you've got to get out of there. I think one of the things we learned from Afghanistan is, you know, the concept of nation building we've got to stop that. Democracy, the form of Republican democracy that we have, only works when you have a certain set of moral principles and values. And for us, those are Judeo-Christian principles and values. Muslims do not believe the same thing. So our form of government doesn't work for them. They believe in theocracy. When they're given the opportunity to vote, guess what they vote for? They vote for the theocracy.
Yes.
So we need to understand that we need to be there. We need to do what we need to do in order to take care of our interests. And then we need to move on. And I think that is a lesson that we have to learn. We need to learn. We can't be everywhere in everything. And when we do decide, like I said, to get involved, there's got to be a defined purpose, a defined goal, and an exit strategy. And I think with Afghanistan, the idea was we should, and I think everybody agreed we needed to get out, but we should have left a presence there. And we shouldn't have told people when we were going to be leaving. Because what we did was we told the enemy, all right, this is when you can start attacking us.
Right. Yeah. And, Gee, before you speak on that point, a little inside baseball. We left $81 billion worth of equipment. But people think about tanks. They think about planes. The most devastating equipment that was left was the retina scanners that had everybody in a database who was helping the Americans. And we abandoned. That's one of the things that breaks my heart because I started reading up about that in Vietnam, how we abandoned. Oh, because my mother helped with what was called the boat people. And a lot of those people that promises were made. And we did the same thing to a lot of people in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now the Taliban can go around using that equipment, find those individuals who helped us, and literally murder them. I'm sorry, Gee. I just wanted to get that point because not many people know that. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. I mean, I definitely, the Marines are number one for me that we left behind that died. But then, like you said, the allies, the pro-American allies, the Afghanis that helped us, they were left behind. And they're trying to get messages out for, you know, some kind of asylum in the United States. And I don't know how they would get over here. But should Kamala be held accountable to this? Absolutely. I think a lot of people are going to say, well, this was 3 years ago. This is history, right? But what needs to happen is you say, well, this is how they handled Afghanistan. So how are they going to handle China and Taiwan? Because what happened 2 days ago, right? What happened 2 days ago? Russian jets flew near Alaska.
Oh, Alaska,
it wasn't just
yeah.
Russian jets. It was Chinese jets too. So they coordinated that, right? That wasn't just by accident. And so they're sending us a message, and I'm not clear what the message is, but clearly they're saying, okay, we're getting aggressive, and we think you guys are talking about America. America is not, you know, that weak old man, right? And that's represented by Biden right now. So we need to talk about that. Trump needs to be out there saying, okay, look, Kamala, this is how she handled Afghanistan. How is she going to handle Taiwan? How is she going to handle what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, because, you know, that's continuing to go on because of, you know, the failure and the weakness of the United States. And then whatever powder keg would be set off in the Middle East.
Right.
I mean, that's always an issue. But my concern is Taiwan and China.
Keep in mind, keep in mind, 5 days after Kamala went out to visit, Ukraine and Russia, that was when Russia invaded Ukraine. So that shows you how much respect they have for her.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely true. I think we'll leave the Afghanistan point on this. I saw Byron Donalds. Donaldson or Byron Donalds? Great. He's Panamanian, just like me. His mom is Panamanian. You know, I found that out listening to him. There's only 4 million Panamanians in the world. So, yeah, baby. But he was telling a tale on Sage Steele's show, the podcast. And this is the difference between Biden and Kamala now, and Trump. He was there at the table, and Trump told the Taliban, "We're exiting," and gave him the parameters, and then said, "If one American is killed, I will kill you." And then he slid across the table a picture of the Taliban's house, you know. And a lot of people who hate Trump, they don't want to give him credit, but it doesn't matter if it's Trump or Eisenhower or when you show testosterone, when you show cojones, the enemy will not react as they have under Biden, because they want to live and they know our technology can now take them out. Mm-hmm. So I am sure that really hit home. And I think that's a big difference. And I think Trump should, I have not heard anybody talk about that except on that podcast. And I think that's a great talking point by Trump. All righty. So, speaking of talking points, I finally got while we were talking, I finally figured out what was wrong with my PowerPoint presentation. It was leaked to the media, which is a rarity. Something pro-Democrat is leaked to the media on talking points. And let me show the audience here. These are talking points. And I just wanted to show the audience because I want to give Bobby Barak from OutKick credit. This is where I found it. But that said, I'm going to pop this video in. And here's the talking points in action. Then I'll get your guys' reactions to it. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I did that accidentally. And kudos to Newsbusters. They are a phenomenal organization. So, guys, we know this happens. We've known for years, those of us involved, that this happens. This could be the very first time we actually have proof. So I don't want to dwell that we know it happens, but how can we use this to convince the people? Because we're always telling them, look, the mainstream media is biased. What's your take on this? Can we use this, or is just something nice for us to know?
Well, there was another video on that I saw on X or Twitter, which is nice to have an alternative free market media, if you will, that shows the before and after Kamala being, I guess, coronated as the presidential candidate. But clearly they were saying she's a border czar over and over and over again. And then after, because of the talking points that you just showed there, it's no longer she border czar. She was never border czar. It's not true. It's a Republican misinformation. And, I mean, it's so blatant and obvious. And I would always wonder, okay, in the 1940s and 30s, when Goebbels over in Germany just spread these lies, everyone believed it. Everyone soaked it up, right? And,
right.
Well, back then, there was no alternative. That was the one media. At least now we have internet sources. But the question I have is whether people out there watch something other than television news. And I think there's a certain segment and that, you know, does go to the internet and search for themselves. But I think a lot of people just turn on the TV at 6 p.m. and watch ABC. And they say, oh, she was never Kamala, or she was never border czar. It's just a Trump talking point. And now Trump takes the blame for something that is clearly untrue.
Well, one of the things you have to realize is that polls have shown that majority of young people, actually their primary source of news is TikTok, which basically means the communist Chinese. We have to do a better job not just messaging, but making sure that our message is getting to the places where people will receive it and it's coming in a form where people will receive it. I know that we don't believe in TikTok, but as long as TikTok exists, we need to be on there. As long as Snapchat exists, we need to be on there. We need to be going to the highways and the hedges and compelling them to come in. And we need to be doing it in a way that will resonate with them. We keep, as Republicans, as conservatives, we keep communicating in a way that resonates with us. Well, we already have us, right? We need to be doing things that will get people who aren't already here, right? It's like, think about, I always say, look at it this way. People don't like going on the mainstream media or dealing with the mainstream media, but it's kind of like the Matrix. If you don't go back into the Matrix, right, the people who are in there don't get a chance to choose between the red and the blue pill.
Absolutely correct. And Zach, your take on this.
Yeah, I having been a staunch reader of 1984, The Brave New World, all these dystopic novels, I genuinely never thought I'd be watching it unfold as blatant as it is today. I mean, they're literally engaging in revisionist history right before our eyes with all the digital proof we have. And so the fight is, like Craig said, we have to, in this case, we have to fight fire with fire. They want to put out these propagandist BS narratives of who she's been this whole time, that we pop a clip like that. We show them, no, this is how she, this is how the White House referred to her. This is how she was presented. This is what she was tasked with. And she owned it and she bragged about it until it failed. And when it failed and failed and failed, they started, you know, trying to damage control. But it's,
right,
it's something that, you know, it, people think propaganda went away because it's not on a poster, right? They think, oh, you know, it's propaganda. It's the... No, propaganda is very sophisticated today. And the way you beat propaganda is with better propaganda. I mean, in order to fight that, yeah, the truth, because that's gonna slice through these false narratives.
Right. What so I will say is the talking points, it really is an admission by them of where their weak points are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their
yes.
weak points are the border and all these other places.
Right. So the sad truth is this. 6 to 10 million people watch ABC News, NBC News, CBS News. When a catastrophe like the assassination attempt, CNN's numbers jump up. I saw a chart by David, is it David Betts? Patrick Betts?
Big
time guy. Yeah. Patrick Betts, David, yes. Yeah. And he showed his two shows combined and he was ranked in the top five. Yet every show in that top 10 list was a mainstream media show, whether ABC News. So even online, they're going. So I think we have to be realistic. We are gaining traction with new media, but they are still winning that battle, sadly. And gee, I am going to show that, even though I showed this one. I wanted to give the take of how the media has talking points, but I'm going to show that video that G is referring to that just shows the contrast, which goes to your point, Zach, of that's how you fight them. Now I want to show this image. They're also flat out lying. They're not, it's like they have talking points and they're trying to shift the truth in what we just saw, but they're also flat out lying. And I love this guy, Defiant LS on Twitter. And let me show you this. Trump falsely accuses Harris of donating to Minnesota Freedom Fund, bailing out dangerous criminals. That's on a technicality. That's right. She may not have donated. We don't know. But then good old friend Defiant LS comes in with her own tweet. If you're able to, chip in now to the Minnesota Freedom Fund to help post bail for those protesting on the ground in Minnesota. The problem with that, first of all, that was wrong. She should never have done that. But it did backfire on her. There's a man whose name is George Holler, 47 years old, got out on bail and murdered somebody, you know? And so we have two things I want to get your comments on. One, this is a flat-out lie, in my opinion, by the local CBS affiliate. And two, it's she – How do we use something like the tweets, the social media posts? How do we bring that to the public? We have the media. I guess it's the same question. So in essence, the real question really is what's your take on the fact that they're now, that's not revising like the takes we saw. That's just a flat out lie. Zach, let's start with you on that.
That's a tough one because like you said, it's not them shifting and trying to rewrite. It's them just blatantly and confidently lying. And, you know, the only, in my mind, I guess, part of the solution is to continue speaking the truth. And I know that sounds cliche, but when they're so brazen to look you in your face, look you in your eyes, and just lie about reality, when most, you know, those of us following and paying attention can remember quite clearly how things have played out, My only effort would be to continue producing content talking about the truth and getting people in on podcasts, in on radio shows, making your own videos, being creative. Because like Craig and we were talking about, the youth, if we want to get the youth involved, we got to be creative. Creativity is what they like. That's what gets them going. And that's where they're most engaged in creation. So content creation, right? And if we continue to ignore that or look at that as just a bunch of liberals, well, then we lose out on all of these people that have not received another perspective or the truth. So
I'll add to that. You know, it's funny. We said, well, politics is of the devil, and now we see that the left, the devil is controlling politics. We said, well, Hollywood and entertainment is of the devil, and then now they're controlling that. And then we said, music is of the devil, and now they're controlling it. It's like, understand that when you give up ground, in particular when you give up ground in the areas that influence society and influence the next generation, you're handing over the keys to the kingdom. We need to be engaged in all places. People keep saying, well, I need to pull my kids out. No, I need to pull out. No, you need to re-engage. In an era of dragons, you need to learn to be dragon slayers.
You know, that's a great point. Before we go to you, it's we tend to run, and that's how we cede ground. And I always tell people who my partner, Big John, you know, he doesn't want to do certain things, and I understand that. But deep down, as a former liberal, I was brought up on the Linsky tactics, and I'm like, use the Linsky tactics with the righteous truth. And going to Zach's point there, to plug my Red, White, and Rude podcast, you know, politics is downstream of culture, and we are missing on Zach's generation because Republicans don't seem to want to understand that. Gee, your take.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this just goes to show that she's soft on crime, even as a former DA in here in California. And when you look at what's happened in California in the last few years, I mean, actually, I just watched some videos on what's happened to Santa Monica. And really, that's just copy and paste from what's happened in San Francisco. And the promenade, which I lived in Santa Monica for about 4 months back in 2019, that was a hopping place. And now it's a ghost town. And a lot of places shuttered up and all that because soft on crime. If you steal less than, what is it, $10,000, it's just a misdemeanor. So you'll be out by morning. You get thrown in jail, out by morning. And, you know, it's just the law of numbers then. Steal as much as you can, and you get arrested every so often, and keep the loot. So, you know, that's what needs to be pinned on her. She's soft on crime, and this is another example of that.
Right. And guys, I am slightly repetitive with a couple of these examples because I want our audience to see – It's not just one. You have choices to pick as your weapon of choice to convince somebody. Zach, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, just to give a quick example of how, you know, we need to meet my generation at where they're at. One thing, and I don't do this often really or ever, that Democrats do very well is they literally set up booths at a Taylor Swift concert.
Yep.
Okay? They're not afraid. They don't shy away from being cringe by being out there. They're there. And believe it or not, they get a crowd. They get tables. They get signatures. They get registration. So these are the types of things we need to be unconventional in meeting where the next generation, my generation, are at. So that's all I just wanted to example.
But you're right. The downside for our side is we get run out, and then the GOP doesn't back our people out by demanding the police protect them and arrest those who are harassing them and breaking the law to get them out of there. So because people don't want to go somewhere where they feel unsafe. But we have to figure out what the law is legally to be able to do that, only because Taylor Swift doesn't want us there. You know, you mm-hmm. heard in Wembley, you know, in essence, what she said is Jason Kelce is a cuck, you know, when she sat there and just crapped on masculinity, you know. To me, what I heard is my husband to be is a cuck, you know. And I say that chuckling, but in essence, that's what she was saying by the patriotism, the patriarchy, God, I had to think of that one, you know, is bad. Now, here's another example in terms of revising history. And this is one of the most important that goes to how we look at where we get our information. And it's from Wikipedia. They removed her as the border czar from Wikipedia. And I don't know if they've done it, but they more than likely locked the page, because I'm dealing with another issue in my pop culture where it's a game and they're using fiction as nonfiction, and they got in a big battle. They said, no, this fiction is actually nonfiction, which wasn't true. And then they locked the page. And here's what I'm talking about. If you look at the bottom, you see the before and after. Vice President of the United States, Harris Kamala, and on the left-hand side, border czar. And you look at it after it's been pulled out, you know? So, again, we have another issue where people who – and my partner, Big John, brought this up, and he's right to a degree. I'm more anal, so I can get around it. But when people – he brought up a very good point. When we say do your own research, well, they go try to do their own research, and the stuff's being taken down, it's being rewritten. How do we overcome? This is a specific question. How do we overcome the power of Wikipedia? Because despite the fact that colleges won't recognize it on a term paper or paper or whatever, the average Joe does. Craig, let's start with you on that.
Well, one of the things is I never considered Wikipedia to be a legitimate source. I always look to other information as well. And understand that there are ways in which to find old versions of pages that have been cached. So even when someone removes something, you can find the old versions of it. But that's why it's also important when you come across something like that to screenshot it. Even if you don't think you're ever going to use it, trust me, eventually it's going to happen, because I'll give you an example. GovTrack ranked Senator Harris as the most liberal member of the Senate, and GovTrack removed that page that they had, where they had the listing. Now, what they didn't do is they didn't remove it from her specific page, because when you go to her page, it's still there. But literally, there is a reworking throughout the media. You're noticing, like, border czar is being removed. You're noticing that the whole thing about her being the most liberal senator is being removed. History is being rewritten right in front of our eyes. So if you have the ability, if you see something, say something, and screenshot something.
Craig, on your point, though, because I've done that. I'm a marketer, so sometimes I got to go pull and find old information. So on some search engines, I can't remember which ones, you can click on the link, and you can click the little arrow, and it'll show cache. But how many people do you think actually really do that? And my take is probably not many, so not the poo-poo on what you said, but to me, that really doesn't solve the issue of how do we solve this dilemma?
That's why those of us who are communicators, those who are participating in this space, those who do blogs, those who do video podcasts, who do audio podcasts, those of us who work within the media, We need to be the ones to do it. We're the ones that are going to have to do the homework that the other folks are not going to do. And then we're going to have to pull out the bullhorns and report what we've come up with to the masses and hope that the people – and here's the thing. There's some people whose mind you're never going to change. But for the people who are actually open – and I think right now, especially after seeing the failures of the policies of the left, there are a lot more people who are open to what we have to say now than at any time since I've been a Republican.
I cannot argue that point. Before we go to you, Zach, let's go to G here. I'm trying to change it up.
Yeah, no. You take the screenshot, and I just saw a tweet from the Hodge twins, I believe it was yesterday, and they were saying that Team Trump needs to be better at creating these tweets and going on TikTok and Instagram and taking these screenshots and showing the hypocrisy, showing the revisionist history that they're attempting to do right now, which they haven't done in years and years and years. It's so easy, it's so blatant, it's so obvious. But like Zach said earlier, you got to meet, what is it, Gen Y, Gen Z, millennials, you got to meet them where they're at. And that's where they're at, TikTok, Instagram, X.
Yeah, that's a great point, G, because I think Trump needs to incorporate some of this stuff because he has a big screen that he shows charts and all that. He needs to incorporate some of this stuff himself because that's going – I'm sorry. Every party has its good and bad supporters, and these are true blood supporters at these rallies. They would eat that up, and they would help run with it. Zach, what's your take?
Yeah, just to piggyback on what everyone said, those of us that are doing the work, that are doing the research, an example, when I was – not personally running, but when I was opposing Nathan Fletcher, I created videos where I took screenshots of what he said, how he deleted it, how he, you know, and I put these little fun things, added some music, and then just share, tell people to share, ask them to share. And that, I mean, that page, believe it or not, had a million impressions throughout San Diego County when it only had 3,000 followers, right?
Wow.
So people were watching. They may not have been following, but they were watching. So that kind of validated, okay, I'm doing all this free work. I'm spending time making the videos, putting the screenshots, but it's impacting people. And that
right.
kind of fulfillment and knowing like, hey, if we just keep producing this content that highlights the work we've done, we're going to change some minds and more than you'd think, I believe.
Zach, Big John is probably saying, shut up, Zach, because I'm going to go, hey, Big John, I got a video. I need some music. I need this incorporated. He's our tech guy here. you know. Okay, so what I want to do now is, because G is right, G was referencing the video. In fact, he's the one who showed it to me yesterday, and I was like, oh, my God, Newsbusters, if you're a conservative, is a must follow. Let me pop this up here. So I'm going to show this video to the audience. This is a video you want to copy, take down, and send it to all your friends here. I'm sorry, I think something went wrong on my end here. Hold on one second. My apologies, people. There we go. That is the best video I think I have seen. And I don't know if y'all caught it, but at least for about 90-95% of them, when they said it wasn't the Border Czar say it was CNN, it was the next clip was CNN saying it. So I don't know if people picked up on that. But, gee, and I know when you sent me that, you're probably thinking, at least to me, that is not even arguably, but that is the best video I've seen so far on it. Just quick thoughts on that, Craig, starting with you on that video there. Do you think that's a powerful weapon we need to spread around?
Well, it is because, you know, those of us who follow conservative or alternative media, we know that they've been lying and that they've been doing stuff like this. But what's interesting is the people who watch the before are the same people who watch the after. And so you either have to have a very, very short memory or you just have to have a certain level of cognitive dissonance or willful ignorance to not recognize that they are changing their tune.
Right, right. Zach.
Yeah, Craig said it very well. That's it's almost like we're being trolled. And I think that's the part that I get a kick out of, but it's also what gets me going because, you know, videos like that will show you that this same audience is being fed completely different narratives at the same time, and it's stringing them along. Mm-hmm. And so something like that shows, boom, 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 compare it, back and forth, like that's so powerful.
It shows you how stupid they think we are.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes, yes. You know what? It proves, because so many people buy into it, it's like, whatever happened to teaching us how to critically think? But Zach, before I go to G, how does that compare with your Fletcher video?
in what sense?
Your ego sense, brother. I'm kidding. I'm just kidding here. I'm just being
These are not the politics you are looking for.
Gee, you're the one who showed me this because I had not seen this. I had not come across it until you showed me. So thank you. And for the audience, G's the individual here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's blatant. I mean, they have no shame. They're just going to parrot whatever was given to them. And, I mean, it's sad. It's sad that our media would go to that length. Now, to be honest, I sat there and wondered, wait, was she really Border Czar? Did they misunderstand maybe what Biden said back in 2021, her one job, right? She had one job and she failed and maybe the title is wrong, but I don't know if you're going to show this screenshot here of House Resolution 253. I sent that to you. But it says in the House resolution, whereas on March 24th, 2021, Vice President Kamala Harris was named Border Czar in charge of leading efforts to stem migration across the United States border. I mean, okay, so if you can think, well, maybe I just misunderstood. Well, right there by the House of Representatives, they called her the Border Czar. She was the Border Czar.
Wow. Okay. That's I'm gonna say right now, that's breaking. No one on the news is talking about that. I mean, so everyone in the mainstream media got it wrong. The House of Representatives got it wrong. Evidently, everybody got it wrong, except for the guy who can't remember the difference between Zelensky and Putin.
Wow. So, guys, I'm typing in MRC Buster because people are telling me that they could not hear the video. And, that's awful depressing. So we're going to move on. But once I find it online, because it's online somewhere, that's where I got it. I'll replay it for the audience. And my apologies and thank you for letting us know. That's a bummer. That's the most powerful video we have here in the fight. The Democrats, damn them, they've infiltrated our show here. So, I wanted to show this one video here, and only because, and it's only 8 seconds. Actually, Big John, he's producing this. If you can find that video, it's from MRC Busters, and just hit me with the URL in private chat. That would be great. But I want to show this 8-second video here because as a Latino, this is what I get mad at the Republican Party. They just don't know how to reach out to us, and they continually screw that up. And prior to that, I wanted to show a video in terms where Kamala, but I don't want to eat up too much time because we're at an hour mark. But before we get to the Latino one, she spoke at the Islamic Center of Southern California and said the term radical Islamic terrorism should be abolished. Now, what irks me about that is the reason we use radical Islamic terrorism is for political purposes, because we used to just say Islamic terrorism. You know, and then they're like, well, you're casting the whole net over all of Islam. You can't do that. So then the Republicans started using radical Islamic terrorism. Now they're pushing the goalposts even more. And she said to her, we need to get rid of that word. I completely disagree with that. And she also said we need to get rid of the word illegal alien. As a Latino, I'm like, no. You don't get rid of it because that's what it says. But I don't know if you guys are aware, having worked in sports, I've always dealt with the AP and the AP style guide. And I noticed 20 some odd years ago, they would change these words. And then eventually that new word would become the new standard.
If I could just point something out, the term illegal alien is a term that has been used by all three of the liberal Supreme Court justices. Correct. It is a legal term. It is a legal definition. It is legal terminology. So to get rid of it would be to ignore what is actually in statute.
Exactly. And that's why I got so angry. I'm like, that's from the government, you know? But yet the AP style book led the change to where now they say immigrant, you know, undocumented immigrant.
Now. No. Now it's migrant.
Well, it's even worse. So my take is, at what point do Republicans go, enough? This is what the term is.
Well, but that's what the left does, is they change terms, they change terminology. I mean, think about it. Racism used to be when you treated someone differently or wrongly because they were of a different race. Now it's, well, if I disagree with you, you are a racist. If you hold me to any standard, you are a racist. If you're white and I am a person of color, you are a racist. Once again, they change terms, they change terminologies, and I'm not going to play their game. I don't play their game anymore. I'm like, you don't get to just redefine something. I'm going to use the definition as it has always been, and we're gonna talk about it in a terminology and utilizing a terminology and phrases that we all know, understand, and agree on.
Correct. G, your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm a legal immigrant. I moved here when I was four. But my father, he went to Canada because he went to graduate school there. And by 69, he was trying to get into the United States. We didn't actually get here till 78. So I was born during that time. My brother was born during that time. And we basically waited in line. And I think a lot of people across all ethnicities that actually wait in line and get here to immigrate, they feel like, why did we do that? We could have just crossed the border and come here the same way they did. So the other thing I want to say is that a lot of people say, well, okay, illegal aliens, nobody is illegal. And it's not talking about the person. It's talking about their action. So,
correct.
Yeah, they're not illegal, but their status here is illegal, and they should be brought back and wait in line and come back legally. And maybe we make it easier for them if they did that, but, I mean, I would just encourage that behavior. But let's try to find a solution that's fair to the legal immigrants who waited in line for 10 years like my father and my family did.
That's exactly what my wife and her family did. And what you tell people is when you not only allow them to skip in front of the line, but you provide incentives for them to do it, you're just encouraging people to break the law. And what you're telling people who go through the process legally is tough luck. You probably should have just, you know, jumped the line like everybody else.
Yep. You know, I have never seen my mom. I learned two things. My mom, one of her happiest moments was when she became a citizen. And I also learned, I was like, holy mackerel, you got to know all this stuff, you know, and I'm not kidding. You know, I think I was a teenager at the time, maybe 50, but I was like more personal. I was like, and I didn't say it, but I was like, damn, she knows more than me right now at this moment in time about what's needed. So you're right. There's also people, I'm tired of, nobody knew or cared about my Latino. I mean, look at me. Would any of y'all look at me and go, hey, you're Latino, man. I see it there, brother. Yes, you know, nobody, you know. They look at me, what's up, white boy? They call me Blanquito in Panama because I'm the lightest skin of them all. You know, so I never cared because I grew up in such a our gang was a black guy, a couple of Lumbee Indians, me a Latino, a couple of Asians, and a white guy. So I always looked at us as we're freaking American. So this whole tribalism, and they made being an American derogatory, you know, or being a patriot. I'm like, that's what keeps a country strong, you know, because outside of that, only war unites a country. You know, so I find it all offensive in how they want to rename terms because, gee, you are absolutely correct. Their actions from day one, they have broken the law. And if my mom can stand in line and I lost, I did not lose, but my cousin was sent back home because he broke the law. And you know when they tell them, well, you can get in here illegally. I'm like, what? And then they're like, well, how can you make that happen, cousin? I'm like, I can't and I won't, you know? So I truly find offensive. And, so I want to show this video though, because Republicans really struggle to connect with Latinos. And an example is the fact that I have seen Latino districts. I want the most qualified person to be a representative, the candidate for whatever office. And my take is if it's a Latino district, it's a black district, odds are you can find a qualified person from that district to represent that district. Instead, they find the rich guy who tends to be more Anglo than anything. And I'm not knocking white people. That's not it at all. What I'm saying is if it's a black district, I would expect a black candidate to emerge from the Republican Party or Latino.
Yeah. You can't be running in a black district when you're the only black person you know.
What would you tell the Republican Party, though, as a black man, Craig?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I've been involved in the Republican Party for over 30 years. I've been involved in particular in working with non-traditional Republican communities. And the biggest challenge that we have with the party is twofold. Number one, you have the insiders. You have the people, the consultants who don't want to share in the wealth. They don't want to work with anybody who's not an insider, people who might already have inner workings within these communities. They don't want to give up their piece of the pie in order to work with anybody who's, in their eyes, a political outsider. The other problem is that this is long term. We didn't get in the situation with these communities overnight. We're not going to get out overnight. It's about taking the time to build relationships. People don't care what you know till they know that you care. And we don't want to take the time. It's a long term process. And when you do that, you can have success. I'm in an area, I've been on the school board now for, this is my 20th year. I'm in an area that's 60% Democrat, and yet I keep getting reelected. We've had a majority of Republicans on our school board more than we've had majority Democrats. Once again, because we focus on building relationships, and we focus on not so much walking around with a big R on our chest, but by governing according to the values we know work. And when they work, people keep reelecting you.
Right. You know, I agree wholeheartedly with that. Gee, you are an Indian, and what I assume, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's pretty much probably 90-some-odd percent Anglo. I mean, did you have to do anything different, or did they welcome you as a candidate? How was that for you?
No, I mean, no one treated me any different. I just met them and talked to them and tried to understand, you know, what they felt about the school and the community and how the school represents the community. And, you know, I don't treat myself any different. And actually, there was a question during a forum in 2018 about what kind of diversity training that I would support. And I said, I don't support treating anybody any different from anyone else. And in fact, growing up as a child, as an Indian kid, I would actually hate the fact that someone would point to me and go, oh, let's, you know, he's Indian. Remember, he's different from us. Let's give him a little extra attention or whatever. That would make me feel like trash, like take the spotlight off me. I just want to be like every single American here, just like them. And that's how I've conducted myself. That's how everyone treats me. Never had a problem here.
If I can just offer just one quick caveat to that. So where I'm in school on the school board, we were near where a military base used to be. So our school district used to be largely middle class, predominantly white. And over time, when the military base closed down, it changed. It became a lot more Latino. It became a lot more of people of color, a lot more low income. And our teachers didn't change much. But the students and the population that they had did. The culture and the home life of the students changed. So one of the things we started doing was what we called resiliency training, where we just tried to help them to better understand the homes and the communities where their students were coming from so that they could create the best possible environment in the classroom for them to learn. I think cultural awareness and cultural sensitivity is important. It doesn't mean that you treat people differently, but it helps you to understand where they're coming from. If I'm giving you directions on how to get to my house, what's the first question I'm going to ask? Well, where are you at? Right? Understanding where you're at helps me to tell you and give you directions on how to get from there to where it is that I want you to be.
And that's what Craig's saying is exactly right. It's you got to understand your community and meet them where they're at. So meet them halfway and connect with them. So, well, absolutely.
So Craig reminded me of our culture sensitivity. So let's go to the white guy, Zach, there. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, well, funny enough, when I was at UCSD, I took many politics of multiculturalism. I took a lot of cross-cultural communication. And, those things I feel very much benefited my awareness of myself in society and others in society. Not out of victim or oppressor, but more just, where does their historical experience lead them to here, right? And looking at it as objectively as I can, but also not cold-hearted, because you have to understand there's going to be people that feel a type of way about their history. And if we're blind to that, then, you're missing opportunities. And I do want to throw a curveball in here that I think is going to be could, and I hope it doesn't, but it's been a challenge amongst the youth of, let's just say, white guys trying to get into these communities to understand. I mean, when I was at UCSD and I was running for vice president, there was a lot of clubs and things that I needed to go and speak to or wanted to go and speak to, and one of them was the Black Student Union. Well, I was stopped at the door and not let in after all these other candidates were let in that were not white. I was not let in to go and speak and address what I wanted to do and help with the community and whatnot. And so that right there, ironically, the idea of the safe space and keeping their own to their own, it prevents this kind of interaction that luckily I've had outside experiences, not academic. But if I just was relying on my academic experience to show me other cultures and other people, they put a stop at the door to let me even get in the room. So a part of the discussion has to be about, allowing that uncomfortableness. Because if that group felt uncomfortable with me being white, well, then let's explore that.
So
right?
You're 100% correct. Here's the problem. The problem is that cultural neo-Marxism, it's kind of funny because it's doing exactly the opposite of what people say they want. They say they want equality. They say they want, us to be, but in the end, what it's doing is they're creating segregation.
Yeah.
Right? They're creating racism. All the things they say they don't want, or they used to say that we used to say we didn't want, they're now pushing. It's kind of funny. If you go back and you read about the progressives of the early 1920s, all of the policies that they advocated for, segregation, eugenics, taxation, disarmament, they're all advocating for the exact same policies, but their motivations have changed such that they get people of color and women, people in these marginalized groups, to advocate against their own best interests, against the very interests that they used to advocate for.
I mean, Craig, I literally campaigned at UCSD for student government on desegregating housing, campus housing, because everything was, there was a pan-African floor, there were pan-Asian floors, LGBT floors. I mean, they had everything, accept white, which I get, but I guess.
Oh, no,
but
at the same time,
it's like what, I mean, having conversations with black students at UCSD was such a trip because I would explain to them what's happening at the student level, the government, student government, and they would think I'm joking. But the idea of fighting for segregation was what they wanted. They wanted separation. And so that was such a confusing.
Well, Zach, it's not confusing. I just did a podcast on homophily. You know, and that's human nature. We studied anthropology 101 in college. You know, Indians want to be with Indians. Whites want to be with whites. Latinos are Latinos. Blacks are blacks. That's just human nature. And when we encourage it by saying, okay, you can have your safe space, they're not scared of you, Zach. That's just the homophily in them coming out. Mm-hmm. Because once they get into the safe space, it becomes a racist space, regardless of what culture you're in. I never got more angry in my life than it was, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I saw the black girl attack the white kid because he has dreadlocks, you know, and then screaming cultural appropriation. Then the safe spaces came in. And I got angry, not because she was black. I got angry because I'm like, cultural appropriation is the worst thing to happen to humanity because sharing our culture is how we interact, how we come together. I was single. I used to bring at Christmas time when I was in Virginia Beach Station in the military, I'd always bring friends home, you know, and it was just pure irony. Most of them were brothers. And that's who I was friends with. And I'd always introduce them to the food I ate. And I was proud of that. But I was also tell them, hey, don't worry if you don't like it. They're like, you sure? I go, yeah, because then I can eat it. That's more for me. I don't get to eat like this every day. But that's how we come together. And that's when I got angry. And then I see the Democrats. And then I see the Republicans with no pushback. We are digressing a bit, but this is an important point for the Republican Party to understand. It's not a black and white issue. Mm-hmm. And getting the rich white guy out of that district isn't helping anybody. But if he's the most qualified and the people want him, I'm okay with that. But what I'm not okay with is you're not out there recruiting those people. Craig, I can see it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, you're ignoring the people who've been there, the people who actually have the connections, the people who are, in many cases, there are a lot of people out there in communities who agree with us that just don't know that they agree with us because we haven't taken the time to build the relationships.
Right.
Zach, I just wanted to point one thing to you. One of the problems we've seen with the rise of cultural Marxism in our universities is that it's gone from education to indoctrination, or as I like to say, our young people are being educated into imbecility.
Yes, yes. That's a powerful statement. Hey, guys, I don't want to dwell on this too much. We still got the school stuff to talk about. But my point with Kamala is she went on that show, and I'm not going to show it because I found the clip. Hopefully it has sound. But my point is she's out there talking about how she's a defender of not just the documented but the undocumented. So she's preaching to that crowd, and we need to do more of it. And I'm not talking at the national level. I'm talking – people like us who are involved in it, not necessarily us, but the candidates. Right now, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, to the audience out there, I learned about from Tony Kovarik, the former San Diego Party chair, that from about 2008, 2009, the Republican Party does not go into red districts. They told me that's a candidate's job. And I'm like, no, you got to work with the candidate to go. Because when I went to walk the first time, my first question was, well, these are red districts. We have this vote. Why are we walking in? And you know what I discovered when I walked? Democrat paraphernalia at the doors when somebody wasn't there, their papers. And that, to me, is how we lost it. So real quick, guys, I want to show the video. I hope it comes up. This is the one that G was talking about, where they say she's not border czar, and boom, they turn around and show that she is. So let me give this a shot. Oh, guys, it's.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything.
Guys, nobody can hear it, is what I'm being told. I will put the URL in the notes for this. In fact, while we're talking, I'll grab it from X and I'll pop it into a small banner. But let's move on. I apologize. That was a great point in terms of that resolution, and I didn't put it into the notes. But that's a pretty important resolution you said. But right now, the House did condemn border czar Kamala Harris. And what I want to point out here is they got six Democrats. Now, per Democrat rules, they call that bipartisan because they're always able to get six, seven rhinos to get their bills across the line, and the whole media goes – Exactly. Yeah. They go, that's a bipartisan vote. Yeah. So is this something that Republicans can use in the fact that they condemned her as border czar? G, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. As vice president, she had one job. And because she failed at that one job, she had no other jobs. So they just kind of put her in Biden's basement that he was in during the 2020 campaign. But we haven't seen much of her. And actually, people who I've been talking to, they're like, I don't know anything about her. She's been vice president for 3.5 years. So the one job that she had, that needs to be elevated. And the fact that they condemned her in this House resolution and called her border czar, yeah, absolutely. That's pretty much the only record on the national stage that she has.
Zach.
Yeah, as said earlier, I mean, her record is Biden's record. Biden's record is her record. And I think one of the best graphics was, ironically, the one that Trump was trying to show at his rally that almost ended his life, which was, look at the trend. Look at how things went. Even the Obama levels were pristine compared to where we're at today. So when you see the Obama years, Trump years, and then it goes literally skyrockets, That right there tells a story, and I think the story needs to continue to be told because that really says it all.
No, I agree. Craig?
Well, I'll have to disagree on this. The one job of the vice president is to wake up in the morning, read the newspaper, and find out if the president is still alive. And instead of actually doing that and finding out if the president was actually alive or brain dead, she decided to play weekend at Biden's.
Right, that's true. I think that they can use this, but they're going to get pushback. And the problem with the Republican Party, once they get pushback, they tend to abandon it. Trump won't get pushback, so I hope he does use this. To me, this is a very important in condemnation because it's what they do. You fight fire with fire, and you get it out there. Okay, so moving on. She's out there blatantly lying. She claimed Trump intends to cut Social Security. It's been fact-checked. He does not. The one that bothers me, Project 2025, and this is the media. It's not just her. It's the media. They're putting that on Trump. The fact check, he disavowed it. Dictator remarks, Trump was not serious when he said that. One of Trump's problems that he still hasn't learned, it's not really a problem, but they make it a problem, is he'll make a joke a lot. You know, then they run with it as if he's 100% serious. Then she lied about manufacturing jobs. So I think, and I have not seen Republicans come back and push back against them. Is this a failure? Obviously, it's a failure. But, Craig, what can the Republicans do to counter this? Because when they go on the mainstream media to talk about it, they get pushback, and they tend to just kind of like, excuse my French, the cojones kind of like shrink up. What would you tell a Republican in that situation?
You know, part of the challenge is that part of our Judeo-Christian background in history, is a lot of us as Republicans, is we tend to be polite. We don't want to be rude. And sadly, as I read in a book called Confrontational Politics, if you ever get a chance to read it, it's a short book by former State Senator H.L. Richardson. It points to that. And we have to understand that we have to be willing to engage. It's kind of like, you know, we're soldiers and we're fighting street fighters. There's no rules to this game. You have to be willing. You have to be willing to battle. You have to be willing to not accept what they say as a premise. Don't worry about being rude. Make your point. If they interrupt you, you interrupt them. If they try to change the subject, you get them back on. You go back to the point that they were trying to make. You don't let them shout over you. We have to be willing to fight and not allow them to bully us. And that's what they do because they're willing to be rude. They're willing to lie. And so we have to be willing, not to say that we should lie, but we have to be willing to stand up and not be bullied. We have to be willing to speak the truth and speak it proudly.
Zach,
I cannot tell you how accurate that is. And I have seen it firsthand as someone that has rolled his sleeves up and has punched back. because I'm tired of watching Republicans tuck the tail and take the punches, because it's not winning anything. It's, in fact, losing us stuff. And they're defining who we are. They're defining what we want and what we think about who, you know, Project 25, this, that, this, and the other. And it's like, where are we championing our ideas? Where are we saying and defining ourselves? And that to me is, I cannot emphasize how important it is to defend and fight back against that. You know, the AOCs of the world need some counterparts that are going to provide that kind of, you know, polite aggression, I guess.
You know, I don't know. Byron Donalds is great at that. He's always pushing back. And that's what we need to be. I think that's why he's really super popular. Your take?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just talk about the Medicare thing, because I think Trump's been hammering that quite hard. Medicare and Social Security is, when people come across the border, they're actually getting the money that Americans are paying into. And Rubio had this amazing video, and it was about 3-4 weeks ago, where he said a man will save up his entire, or woman will.
Did we lose G there?
I think he froze up.
Right before.
G froze up with that nice.
I was going to make a point regarding the Social Security, though. The one thing I will say is, and this part of this has to do with Trump not being as capable of communicating his positions, I think, as J.D. Vance will be able to. Anyone who says that we need to look at how we're handling Social Security and Medicare because they're going to go bankrupt. We have to look at the entitlements. We have to figure out how to fix them. And one of the things that frustrated me with Congress under Kevin McCarthy, and then following that with Donald Trump, was not – I get it. We're not going to cut benefits, but we've got to take a look at it. We've got to do something to address the impending bankruptcy.
Right. G, you're back. I think Craig kind of took your thunder there with what he said, but I think that's where you're headed. But it's not just Medicare, it's also Social Security. But please go on, G.
Yeah, no, I was just going to finish off with Rubio was saying that someone will come across the border 30 years old and get paid more than the Social Security retiree who paid into the system their entire life. And there is an inequity in this, in the entire system. And Trump's attacking that, and Rubio is too. And like you guys said, we just need to be aggressive as Republicans, as conservatives, and make the case that this system is not working for the ones who pay into it.
Exactly. I mean, my high school teacher blatantly told my class with a serious face, none of you guys are getting Social Security. Don't even think you're saving and putting money that'll come back to you. So I think as things go, my generation definitely has to have that conversation because my abilities is crazy.
Well, it's not just that. It's the illegal aliens, as I call them. They're getting $2,000 a month. It's like I read somewhere like the average person gets like $1,600. You know, so they come
out of Social Security. What? That makes absolutely no sense. Absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that's happening. All right, guys. The final caveat is every cycle, every year, every month, every day, the black vote. I came across this individual. Oh, before I forget, the URL to that video that we had no sound on, it's right there. Sadly, I'm going to pull it down because I want to give this individual some props. His name is, oh, gosh, where'd he go? Anton Daniels. His words to me were powerful. I mean, powerful, powerful, powerful. When I saw that, my wife pointed it out to me, and I was like, oh, my God. So I want the audience to see this, and let's have volume. So here we go.
Oh, I've seen it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hit a button. Damn it, I did it again.
What are they facepalming about?
I don't think we hear it.
I can't hear it. Okay. I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah, me neither.
Still saying. I don't think the audience is hearing it.
Guys, I must have. This is frustrating.
Can you summarize?
I'm here. In essence, he attacked Kamala through policy, through the proxy wars, through his biggest attack was the urban cities, how they're being destroyed by the illegals coming in, how Obama came on board, promised a lot, delivered nothing. He attacked it from seeing people are going to take this wrong way. Oh, yeah. From an intellectual way. He's talking to just average, everyday people there, and he's attacking it as we would. You know, because when I talk to my friends back home, that's not how we talk. It's in fragments. It's more anger, more attack. And he was very eloquent in putting his points across. And you saw every person there. He had them. He was like an orator the way he was speaking. I was like, oh my God, that was so powerful. This is frustrating. I don't know what's happening to people.
The reason why they shout. They will tend to shout you down. And I've been on their radio stations. I've been on their TV shows. They will shout you down because they know that the facts are on your side. Even when you can share with them the links, all of that stuff, they know you're right. But keep in mind, politics, voting, it's an emotional decision. People don't like Trump. It's an emotional thing. Orange man bad. Sends mean tweets. They don't care about, in many cases, reality until you help them people to understand how the policies of Donald Trump have actually impacted them. The things they're angry about, the things they're mostly angry about, the real things in life, yeah, that's because of Joe Biden. That's because of Kamala Harris. So when you can tie it to them, tie it to what they're dealing with, make it emotional for them, and then back it up with facts, data, and information, now that's when you start changing people's minds.
Right, and he actually sat there in frustration. He says, "And y'all here talking about tribal or identity politics?" And then because his anger was at the facts are obvious, as you're saying. I want to come back to you, Craig, before we move on to Gavin Newsom and the new law, because you are a black man, and I want to give you the last word on this. But it's kind of frustrating because you guys didn't see it. But the way he talked, he was not talking. He was talking on policy, on facts. And I think when I heard that, I was like, that's how we need to speak to the black community. But when I say we, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about black Republicans. You know, they need to get back in those districts. They need to challenge the status quo. And I'll be honest, I don't see that happening. Gee, your thoughts on that?
Well, the Indian community is very similar. I think it's 90% left-wing and 10% conservative. And it's hard because the moment you bring in which side of the aisle you are, there is a, oh, okay, you're one of those, and turn off the ears, right? So you have to talk about the policies, right? Like Craig said, talk about, well, lower taxes, more, more equality in terms of opportunity, right? Let people compete on their own merits. And that ends up being 90-10% the other way. They'll actually agree with you until they go, oh, wait a minute, are you Republican? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I don't want to listen to you anymore.
Right.
So
exactly.
If you stick to the facts and stick to the policies, I think there's you'll make headway. But the problem is once they see the R after your name, in my community, the Indian community I'm speaking about, all of a sudden you lose 90% of them.
I got to be honest, Zach, before we go to you, that in the Latino community, I can make headway. You know, so they thought they would come in and the Latinos, we would just fall in line. And we did it. And you want to know what the ugly, terrible secret they don't want you to know? Latino, we're a culture. We're not a people, meaning we're like America. We go from white to black. The difference is you go into a Latino household and you can find white to black related. So they weren't able to come, y'all are brown people. That's one of the biggest myths that Americans don't understand. So they weren't able to corral us in. So we're a little bit different, but we're making headway. And you see that in the demographics in terms of Trump support. So from the difference between the Indian and the black community is at least that's how I've experienced it as a Latino. When I go back to Panama, they ask me about Obama. They ask me about Trump. And with Trump, they had the pre-politician mentality. You know, they wanted to be the Donald, you know. So it's much easier for us to make headway than it is probably for blacks and Indians. But Zach, before we go to Craig for the final word on this topic, please, what's your take?
Yeah, my role in this is to get other similar-looking Republicans to make those efforts, to do that outreach, to go into the lion's den, to get uncomfortable because it matters. These communities, I mean, my girlfriend is Hispanic. Her entire, her family are all Republican. And, you know, some of them are open about it, some of them are not. And like earlier was said, many people just don't know they're Republican. And I think that's a part of the communication of how we deliver our values. But we need to deliver them and do it in hard places that may not hear them often.
You know, I can't speak for the other cultures, but with Latinos, that's true. But it's funny when you said that because my partner, Big John, libertarians always say that. You're libertarian. You just don't know it. So, and there's always truth to that, I think, with aspects of it. But Craig, am I right in saying we need to get more Republican, black Republicans to go in the actual ghetto, as much as I say Latinos into the barrios, whites into the trailer parks, because there's a stigma, as G said, with the R. They'll talk to you, and then once they see it's an R, boom, things tend to change. What's your take on that, and what would you advise the Republican Party to do?
I mean, I can tell you that I know plenty of black Republicans who've been doing it for decades. The challenge also, though, is this, is that the people who are elected, the Republicans who are elected are not elected in these areas, but they need to show up. Because guess what? People recognize power. They respect the position. When they see their assembly member, when they see their congress member, when they see their state senator showing up, but they don't see any Republican state senators, Republican assemblymen. The reality is that the people who have the power, they need to show up as well, because they're already in a position where they are making decisions, where they are influencing policy, but they don't bother to show up. If you send someone there who's not elected, what power does he bring with him? What authority does he bring with him? He may be right. He or she may be right on all the issues, but they don't have any backup in terms of political power and influence. That's what you need to get. The people who are in elective positions need to be the ones showing up. The people who are running the party needs to be the ones showing up. A good friend of mine down there in Southern California, Mark Iles, we were at a meeting one time when Duff Sundheim was chairman of the California Republican Party. Duff was talking about, oh, well, we want to do this, we'll do that. And Mark stood up and he said, look, he said, Duff, I've known you for decades. I've been to your business. I've been to your home. He's like, you've never been to my community. You've never been to my business. You've never been to my home, right? We say we're like this. The Republican Party's like this. We're a church that opens the doors and then wonder why nobody comes in. When the Bible says go to the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in. If we're not going places where the people are, where we want them to come in, they're never going to hear from us. And that's so. So we need the people with influence and power to be there as well.
And that influence of power comes from the unlikeliest places. I was able to put on the congressional debate as well as the board of supervisors, because when I went there, my friends, my wife, how were you able to do that? I told them I am a representative of this community as an elected position. The moment they saw that, heard that, boom, they were on board. Mm-hmm. So you're right. If they see power, and like I said, power is just how they view you, we can get a lot done. You know, all right, guys, I want to move on here to our next topic, and that is Governor Gavin Newsom. And I apologize. We have a viewer here. It's your buddy Cole Martin, another young Republican. I recognize the name. And he says, again, Cole, I apologize. It's a simple statement, but Liv's working overtime. But Cole is absolutely right. Libs always work overtime. You know, the Republicans, and when I say overtime, this is when I get into arguments with the Republican Party. Well, that's not my job. That's not my job. And I'm like, and I'm not going to lie. Nobody here outside of my area knows who Marie Waldron is. I know some of you guys may know. She's my representative or on her way out because she's being termed out. And I get so angry. I'm like, you are the leading Republican in this state. It is your job to go get young women to see that power that you have, to sit there and talk to them, to encourage them. It's your job to go help other Republicans get elected, you know, as Craig was saying. And I would always hear, that's not her job. They would get vehemently mad at me because mostly because everybody loves Marie Waldron. You know, God bless Marie Waldron. The only time Marie Waldron would show up would be at a GOP event. I live in her district. I saw her one time, and that was like a cycle ago. Oh, William, she's scared to fly. I don't give a rat's ass and don't run for office. You know, and then my final take on that is, how'd you go from working a T-shirt store there with your husband to living in our most exclusive residential area where the houses start at about $2 million a pop? So I'm not knocking her because I dislike her. I'm knocking her because I got angry. Because you don't want to do your job. Your job is not just to be in Sacramento, you know. So, Cole, you are absolutely right. The libs always work overtime. A liberal views their job as to get other. My final comment before I get taken to you guys is I went for the Central Committee down to the Registrar's office. Me and a 70-some-odd-year-old woman. I'm in my 50s. I looked at 8 young people. I talked to them briefly. 8 kids in their 20s running for Central Committee for the Democrat Party. A 70-some-odd-year-old and me going to register to run for Central Committee. Craig, your thoughts on Cole with Liz working overtime?
Yeah, well, when you don't have the truth on your side, you have to work overtime. I'm a big believer in you show up in particular. Go the place. Go where they are. A lot of times the reason why liberals get to lie about us is because we're not there. It's a lot harder for them to lie on us when we are there in the room. When I worked for Kevin Jeffries, former assemblyman, now Riverside County supervisor, he would go to every meeting, union meeting, didn't matter. He would show up, and you know, his whole thing was, if they never get a chance to see me and hear from me, then all they have is what the left tells them about me. So no,
right, exactly.
We do need to show up. We do need to be there. We need to go the places we haven't traditionally gone. How are we ever going to take ground if we never show up on that ground? If we've never taken the time to understand how we need to engage in battle on that ground? And correct. That's the problem that we face right now. Is I remember one time I did a debate on the I was the only Republican, and the other groups were so liberal that not even the Democrats showed up. It was the Democratic Socialist Party, the Socialist Party, and the All African People's Liberation Party. Guess who got all the questions?
You.
The Republican, because they had never seen a Republican before, exactly. Let alone a black Republican. And the thing was that I was in a position where I was able to share with them things that they had never heard before. And that's why it's important for us to just show up.
I agree. And that's why I got so angry at her. And, you know, I did make a mistake. People kept trying to get me to meet her. And I wanted nothing to do with her. I was so angry. I should
have. She's a nice person. She is. But
oh, no, she is. She's very nice. She's very nice. But that's see, that's what people would always say. They get mad at me. Oh, she's so nice. I'm like, yeah, so am I. I can be very nice, but there's a job we have to do. You know,
I'm going to tell you something. Donald Trump is at times not very nice, yet he's been the most effective president in my lifetime.
There you go. Zach, I'm going to wait for you to go last because you're the young Republican here. Gene, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, going back to what Craig was saying with the last topic and even this topic, the his two answers basically were very similar. When I talk to people, then they find out I'm a Republican, they're like, oh, wow, really? You're really nice. And it's like, okay, well, you know, thank you, but most of us are. And if we just show up, then, you know, they get a different view of how we are and what we believe. And so most of what they believe about us comes from the media or the alternative media. I will tell you, on X, in the last 2 days, the Kamala supporters have, like, ramped up, like, 300X. I mean, I just see tweet after tweet after tweet. They're working overtime right now. So, yeah, we just need to be ready to roll up our sleeves and do the same.
Okay, so, Zach, we're going to close it out with this gentleman. I'd love to bring you back only because of we're almost hitting the two-hour mark. And I'd love to bring you back because, to me, it's very important to talk about AB 1955. So I'm putting you on the spot, but I hope we can bring you guys back to do this again in the very, very near future, maybe next week. But that said, Zach, you are a young Republican. You are the future. The first thing I noticed about you, oh gosh, forgive me, is Cynthia Kawa, she is the president, was how much you guys were, and Cole Martin, you know, he was just quoted by the USA Today, and congratulations on that, Cole. But is you guys are active. What is your plan to overcome the fact that the libs do work overtime, and I'll be frank, Republicans don't work enough?
Yeah, and it's going from, you know, attacking the media to becoming friends with them and getting them to care about what we're doing and getting them. And now we've built this relationship where every major news outlet here in San Diego reaches out to us on our input, on current events, on national events, local stuff. That was never a thing before because there was never a relationship built. So just kind of like Craig was speaking about, you know, if we're not there, well, then we don't get any say in anything, nor do anyone else get to see who we are. So when the media, when we foster a relationship with the media, which sometimes they'll throw things in and frame it differently, but getting us out there is what I think was generated a lot of that excitement. If you build it, you know, they will come. And we've built something and are building something that is inviting. You know, I get, just like the comment was said, I get a lot of people that say, you know, Zach, you're, you know, one of the most rational Republicans. You're one of the most nicest Republicans. I'm like, come to one of our events. There's a bunch of us. Like, stop thinking you know who we are, you know, or they'll think, you know, we're just a bunch of Alabama Republicans, you know. And it's like, no, we're Republicans in San Diego and California, and we're doing things and speaking differently. We don't have the same narrative rhetoric as an Alabama Republican. And I think that's a part of meeting people where they're at. You're not going to get Republicans here in San Diego that are even like Alabama Republicans. So you need to speak right. People, this group, any community, a lot differently, more localized. And I think that's how we've seen our growth. It's not, we're not fabricating it like the Chinese on our numbers. Like, this is, we're having genuine organic growth in our membership and our excitement. So just keeping that.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, before we go, I want, if you can tell us where we can find more information about yourself. And Zach, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm on all social media outlets. It's usually just my name, Zach, ZACKGIANINO. I'm very accessible. I'm always willing to engage, whether you agree with me, whether you hate me. I don't block people. I don't ignore people. I engage with it. So I'm always open to people that want to get involved or, like said, challenge a Republican that you may never have had the access to.
And G.
Yeah, you just go to my website, gmangani.com. It's my campaign website, but that gives a little bio about me. So Rancho Santa Fe School Board, you can just Google that and you'll find me.
Outstanding. We'll make sure we have that in the notes once we release this as a podcast. And Mr. DeLuz.
You can find me most social media at Craig DeLuz. You also find me at CraigDeLuz.com. I also host a daily program. We live stream 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, called The Rundown. It's me and a partner of mine out of Florida. You can find it on Spotify, Rumble, YouTube, but I encourage you to tune in.
And I checked that out on X. And again, we'll have that info down below too. Gentlemen, I'm going to remove you from the room, but don't take off yet. Thank you for coming on. A very lively discussion. Not much debate, but I think we all had different points to bring in, and thank you for that. So I will talk to you guys shortly. And to the rest of the audience, thank you for attending and watching our very first live stream of Fired Up. I think we bring a lot of energy to it. And do not forget to like and share this. And you can find this podcast and others at grumblingsmedia.com, where we have a libertarian podcast, where I have my politically sports show with the intersectionality of sports and politics, Points on the Board, as well as my show on pop culture and politics. And that is The Red, White, and Rude at grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us at the various outlets, YouTube, Rumble, Google, Pandora, Spotify, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. To everyone, until next time, this is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.